Welcome back to the program. In the world of extreme right-wing rhetoric, it often seems that the practitioners are always upping the ante in order to get attention. Listen to any hour of talk radio and you get the idea. However, what happens when the rhetoric gets out of control? When the listeners, particularly those that are scared, marginalized, and easy prey, begin to act on that rhetoric and take matters into their own hands? Over the years, we've seen many examples of this. And unfortunately, for many reasons, a lot of these examples seem to take place in Arizona. We're going to talk about one such incident today with my guest, Dave Nyworth. He is the managing editor of the political blog Crooks and Liars. His reporting and commentary have appeared in American Prospect, The Washington Post, and Salon.com, and he has spent considerable time chronicling the exploits of right-wing extremism. It is my pleasure to welcome Dave Nyworth to the program to talk about his work and Hell Followed With Her, Crossing the Dark Side of the American Border. Dave Nyworth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
It's great to have you here, Dave. First of all, tell us a little bit, and I want to play in just a moment, the beginning of this story, which is the 911 call that really began all this, but set the scene a little bit in terms of where this was and what was about to happen.
Well, this is a 911 call from a little town out in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. It's called Aravaca. It's about 10 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border as crow flies, about 15 miles of drive time. And town of about 1,000 people, has no police or anything, and it's about 30 miles from the nearest freeway, so it's quite a ways out, like I say, out in the country. And it's frankly a little smuggling town. It has always been a smuggling town since the 1870s when they put the border in down there. And a lot of folks have made their living by smuggling over the years, including the folks who were involved in it.
Let's take a listen to this 911 call.
911, where is your emergency?
Ma'am, somebody just came in and shot my daughter and my husband.
They shot them?
Yes,
what's your
Aravaca, Arizona.
And what's your... And they shot your husband and your daughter? Are they out conscious?
Please, ma'am, please. She's bleeding out of her mouth. Please.
How old is your daughter?
She's 10.
10? And where were they shot?
In the head. Should I pick her up so she's not bleeding?
No, I want you to leave her where she is, okay? What I'm going to do, are they still there, the people who are there that shot them?
They're coming back in.
Do you know who they are?
Get the out of here.
Hello? Are you still there? Are you okay?
Ma'am, I don't know. I'm scared.
How many people were there?
I don't know, ma'am. I was asleep, and I can't even move. I've been shot myself.
Where were you shot?
I think I'm shot in the leg. I'm not sure, ma'am.
Okay.
Please hurry.
Are you armed?
Yeah.
Okay, they're coming. Lights and sirens. Okay, they are coming.
Ma'am, please hurry.
And you...
They told us that somebody was, had escaped jail or something. They want to come in and look at my house, and they just shot my husband, and they shot my daughter, and they shot me.
Wow.
Yeah, that recording goes on for another 18 minutes or so as
right.
The dispatcher talks her through this. It was quite an extended exchange of gunfire there. It went on for about a minute or so. Of course, I'm sure for length we had to edit that.
Right.
But in the process, Gina Gonzalez, who had been shot by these people when they invaded her home, pretended to be dead and curled up in a corner. And then when they left, she got on the phone because they had also shot her 9-year-old daughter, and she was, of course, calling to get help. And while she was on the phone, the chief perpetrator of this crime, a woman named Shauna Ford, came walking back in, and her big smile went away as soon as she saw Gina on the phone, and she ran back out and told her gang to get back in there and finish the job. The gunman went back in. You heard some of the gunfire that was exchanged. Gina grabbed her husband's gun, crawled into a corner of the kitchen, and kind of shot blindly back, but she managed to wound the gunman on his calf, just took a chunk of flesh out of his calf, and he went running out of the house yelling and trailing, leaving a nice DNA trail for investigators to find the next day, which they did, and in short order had pretty quickly ascertained that the perpetrators were not drug cartel people, which is what the perpetrators were hoping law enforcement would think, but was actually these Minutemen. And in 2 weeks' time, they were under arrest, and now both of them are on death row.
Why Gina Gonzalez and her family? Why did they come to this house?
Because Junior Flores, her husband, was, in fact, a marijuana smuggler, but he was a small-time guy. And some of his only rival in town was the one person that Shauna Ford had had contact with, and he had told Shauna that there was $3 million in drugs and money in that house. And so they went in, and they were planning to leave no witnesses when they went in. But they were planning to rip these drug dealers off. Shauna had concocted this scheme sometime before of financing her Border Watch operations by ripping off marijuana smugglers. And so, of course, she got in way over her head when she started playing in that field and was actually used by these people just to get rid of another dealer or another smuggler. And it was, they shot these people in cold blood. And of course, it was very easy, I think, for Shauna to do, partly because she'd spent so much time ranting about subhuman Mexicans. She didn't see these people as human beings.
There was also this line that seemed to vanish for her between her criminal behavior on the one hand and what she claimed was her Minuteman activity on the other.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, her logo had it. The logo for her own Minuteman organization, which was called Minuteman American Defense, had at its center an American bald eagle with a crest that said "Rule of Law," and this is what she claimed that this was all about. And of course, that was what the Minutemen claimed that they were all about, was enforcing the rule of law. But rule of law seemed to be a rather fungible concept for Shauna.
There was also the sense of Shauna and the rest of her people that human life was pretty disposable out there.
Yes, indeed. Well, she was functionally a psychopath. As far as I can tell, she certainly exhibits all of the classic traits of a psychopath. So, and psychopaths, as you know, have a hole in their souls. They have no ability or very little ability to empathize with other people. So she was devoid of empathy, but she was good at simulating it, especially when it came to family and friends and people she wanted to manipulate. And, you know, she was really a master manipulator, and she got a lot of people to do a lot of things, which is pretty remarkable considering her background. I mean, this is a woman who committed her first felony at age 11. And was a teenage prostitute here in Seattle, and had a rap sheet as long as your leg. But when she, after her fourth marriage, decided she was going to save America from illegal immigration, she joined up with these Minutemen. She managed to avoid any kind of close scrutiny by the Minutemen, who, you may recall, were always assuring us that they carefully vetted everybody in their organization, right? but they didn't even bother to check the fact that Shauna had committed all these crimes under her four previous names. They only did a background check for her under her name, Shauna Ford. But she had quite a long record, and of course none of this got caught. And it was really a very simple thing to do this kind of background check. My friend Scott North up at the Everett Herald finally did a proper background check on Shauna and came up with all this information very readily. So it wasn't anything that, I mean, it was something that the Minutemen could very easily have ascertained for themselves, but let's be frank, they were really not very, they liked to talk to reporters and tell them that they were eager to sort of filter out any Nazis and white supremacists from their ranks, but they did absolutely nothing about it in reality.
To what extent did this activity, did this crime, come from the impact of the Minutemen and the demonization that had gone on, or how much of it was simply the criminal psychopathology of Shawna Ford?
I think it's actually kind of hard to to separate those, because Shawna's fantasies about being heroic were fueled and fed by this whole idea of being a hero out there on the American border protecting America from illegal immigration. And it went really hand in hand with her ambitions to, I mean, Shawna really had no sense of, didn't really draw any lines between what was legal and what was not, especially when it came to the cause, right? In other words, the heroic value of her efforts made any other sort of criminal components negligible, because it was more important that she save America, and who cares what means she took to achieve that.
What about the people that were with her?
Well, one was Albert Gaxiola, the other marijuana smuggler who set her up on with the Flores family. And he's, as I say, he's actually not on death row. He's got the equivalent of life without parole in Arizona prisons now. And then there was the gunman, Jason Bush, who was another classic. I mean, really, a lot of ways, these guys were three cons conning each other, because he had convinced Shawna and Albert and everybody else that he was this mighty three-war veteran who had been in Afghanistan and Iraq and Bosnia and been on special forces and was a highly trained special forces veteran and so on and so forth and had seen all this combat duty. In reality, the guy had never served a day in his life and was a serial killer neo-Nazi from Wenatchee, Washington. He had, after these murders in Aravaca, the murders in Wenatchee that he had committed finally came to light, but because they had been investigated for some time, and he was a suspect, but they didn't know where he was. Well, he was down in Arizona, and they finally caught up to him, but of course none of those charges have been brought because he's on death row in Arizona.
Talk a little about the authorities when they came that night and also in the investigation that followed, and what they initially thought and how their investigation unfolded and what they came to think in terms of the story.
Well, because Junior Flores was a marijuana smuggler, the assumption, or the working assumption of investigators right off the bat was that this was a drug cartel crime, which was highly unusual, of course, because there's very little cartel crime north of the border. And so they were, you know, it was very odd. But they had this trail of blood streaming out of the house. Gina described her attackers as Caucasians who were pretending to be Border Patrol, and that she also, and there was also a silver-handled or a silver pistol out by the fence line with Shawna's fingerprints on it. All of these pretty quickly, and Gina had also seen a teal van come rolling by their house very slowly earlier that day, and she told detectives about this. Well, detectives went over to, acting on a tip, went over to Albert Gaxiola's house and found that van parked outside. And not only that, but there was Jason Bush's blood all over the inside of that van. And so they took Albert Gaxiola into custody. They asked him about the text messages on his phone to a person named White, and they quickly ascertained that that person, and these text messages are right around the time of the murders, and they asked him, they found out that this woman, person White, was in fact Shawna Ford, and they asked Albert, why why does she go by the name White? And he explained that it was because she can't stand any other ethnicity. So, but the law enforcement was very quick on the case. They quickly ascertained that this was not drug cartels. It took a while to track down Shauna, because she took off on the road with Jason Bush and went over to California to commit another home invasion there. This time it was a white couple, and they only tied those folks up. They didn't kill them or harm them at all. But they did take $12,000 out, which was more than they got out of the Flores home, because Junior Flores, as I say, he was actually a pretty small-time operator. But he was also experienced, and he had a wife and kids at home. So he had all of his operations, of course, set up at a safe house well away from his home, and there was no money or drugs there. So when they did it, they didn't get anything out of it other than some of Shauna took off some of Gina's jewelry. And they even missed the $3,000 in cash that she had taken out of the bank earlier that day and stuck in the side pocket of her purse. When they emptied the purse, they missed that money. So they went out to California, took $12,000 from this unfortunate family friend of Shauna's mother, and who had made the mistake telling Shauna's mother in Shauna's presence that she had $12,000 in the safe in her home. And so they went and took that money, and they went back to Arizona. Shauna went to Glenn Spencer's ranch, Glenn Spencer being one of the godfathers of the Native Border Watch movement, sent off some emails to Jim Gilchrist, and was arrested outside of Spencer's ranch.
Once the story came to light, how did others in the militia movement, in the Minuteman movement, others in these nativist movements, how did they respond to this?
Well, they tried to pretend that Shauna was a rogue element, that they had nothing to do with it. And that, she, you know, they all quickly denounced her and said, you know, Gilchrist said, well, we had minimal involvement, which was just as bald-faced a lie as you could get. And Chris Simcox said, well, we kicked her out as soon as we possibly could, although in reality he had begged her to try to remain and worked hard to try to keep her in his ranks. So, even more importantly, I think, is that what happened really is that Shauna pretty much killed their brand name. They don't call, there are still a few vigilante border watch outfits out there. They call themselves things like Patriot Border Alliance or whatever. They don't use the Minuteman name anymore. Because as Al Garza, who used to be Chris Simcox's spokesperson, put it, you say Minuteman now, people think murderer. I mean, that was what she did to their brand name, and it's true. So there is a lot of that still going on, not as much as there used to be, partly because this vigilante border watch business has really become quite disreputable. Even more recently, we had the guy JT Reddy down there in Arizona, who was head of the National Socialist Movement, the neo-Nazi organization, and he too was running border watches down there in Arizona, and he was a great defender of Shauna Ford. But JT last summer went on a shooting rampage and murdered his ex-wife and his three children, and then shot himself. So that brought an end to his border watch operations, and it put another black mark on the whole concept.
To what extent has all of this activity gotten worse since 2008, 2009?
What I think a lot of people are fearful of is that we're starting to see more and more odd incidents out there where people are, or border crossers are actually being assaulted, being shot. And the FBI, believe me right now, is investigating these cases, not as human smuggler crimes, but more likely Minuteman crimes. So there is some of that going on down there. A lot of the border crossing activity is curtailed, has fallen back dramatically because, A, the American economy has fallen on hard times, so the jobs aren't here for them, and, B, the Mexican economy has improved dramatically. So people are far more inclined to stay home. And so there isn't quite as much border crossing activity as there used to be, but there still is some. And I think there is increasing concern that some of these vigilantes are going beyond just calling for the Border Patrol when they see a border crosser, which is what they originally claimed they were doing.
The other side of the same coin is that since 2008, 2009, and since the election of Barack Obama, some of the nativist movement has become more active.
Well, yeah, what's actually happened to the... I don't know that the nativists have become more active. What they have done is... I mean, really, a lot of these folks that were involved in the Minutemen are taking their activities and putting them into the Tea Party. Glenn Spencer, most notably, but a lot of these guys are... They're giving up on doing the border watches and are now trying to influence policy, particularly on comprehensive immigration reform, through Tea Party activities. So that's and functionally, when you look at the Tea Party sort of immigration position, it's essentially not even an iota different than what you get from the Minutemen.
Dave Nywert, his book is And Hell Followed With Her, Crossing the Dark Side of the American Border. Dave, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I hope that when people read the book that they'll start thinking about how we talk about immigration.
Thank you. Dave Nywert, we'll take a break. I'll be right back.